don't frighten us by telling us the facts, 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 the facts. We must be the great arsenal of democracy. For us, this is an emergency as serious as
for 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark in the great state of Delaware. I'm Bill Humphrey, and thanks for listening. The following episode was recorded on January 6, 2019, and produced by me at my studio in Newton, Massachusetts. This week, Sarah and Rachel joined me to talk about Tumblr's recent controversial content policy change and the wider misguided anti-trafficking legislation that led to it. That's all coming up on Arsenal for Democracy. Episodes are available for download on Tuesdays at arsenalfordemocracy.com and from iTunes or Stitcher. We air the show in Delaware on 91.3 FM and stream it simultaneously from WVUD.org on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. Follow us on Twitter at AFD Radio or like us on Facebook. This is Arsenal for Democracy. You're listening to Arsenal for Democracy. I'm your host, Bill Humphrey. Joining me on the line this week from Idaho, first we have Rachel. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
And also in Idaho, Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so what are we going to be talking about this week? Sarah, I think you're going to be leading us through most of the discussion on this.
I wanted to talk about the bills commonly known as SESTA-FOSTA. SESTA stands for Stop Enabling Sex Traffickers Act, and FOSTA stands for Allow States and Victims to Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act. And by those names, you would think that, okay, that'd be something to support, that it's a laudable goal to crack down on sex trafficking. The problem is that this was enacted very poorly. The wording is quite broad. There's a part in SESTA that amended Section 230 of the Safe Harbors of the Communications Decency Act. That Section 230 made online businesses immune from civil liability for the actions of their users. So what was amended is that this immunity does not apply when it comes to sex trafficking. So if any user of a site is involved in sex trafficking, then liability is on the website that facilitated that action. So that applies to social media sites such as Facebook, and the big news story, the big splash was Tumblr banning all adult content, and that was kind of the impetus for bringing up this subject. That's why I wanted to talk about this and maybe get into a deeper discussion rather than just considering porn on Tumblr. How does this affect marginalized communities, most notably sex traffickers or sex workers? Pardon me.
So I guess where do we want to get going on this first? Either of you feel free to point us where we should be focusing first.
So the sex workers were notably against the passage of these bills, and even some advocacy groups for victims of sex trafficking itself were also against the passage of this bill, which might seem unusual, but it was because they knew that this would have some unforeseen consequences, negative effects for sex workers that aren't involved in sex trafficking. So it's broader than just sex traffickers. And it also facilitates some sex trafficking. That's what people are claiming, by pushing everything underground and harder to monitor and oversee and do something about. So sex workers would say this makes us websites were a safety net that kept people from the streets. So one notable victim in all this was a website called Backpage. And Backpage was an online classified service that I think could maybe incorrectly, but since I'm not super knowledgeable on Backpage, it might be described as kind of like a dating app, but for, or maybe not a dating app, but a dating site, but for sex workers, that allowed workers to filter through and screen out clients before they met in person. And so that added a layer of safety to what is a risky industry. So this got rid of that. That was one of the early casualties. There's also people who say that this leads back to the rise of pimps. So Backpage also let sex workers be kind of their own boss, but on the streets,
if they needed to have someone brokering for them, then that is more likely to fuel sex trafficking, probably, right? I guess is the argument.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, that's the argument.
Rachel, do you want to weigh in on what we've talked about so far?
I just wanted to point out there is an oft site, according to an article we found on The New Yorker, there is an oft-cited study by researchers from Baylor University and West Virginia University that found that from 2002 to 2010, when Craigslist's erotic services site was active and solicitation was more moved indoors and off the streets, the female homicide rate fell by 17%. Kind of a well-known former sex worker, Katie Simon, she stated that she used to use Backpage to advertise, and she wrote in April, "Many of us will die. Some of us have already died because of the damage cest has done. And the victims will more often be trans workers, disabled workers, workers of color, and trafficking survivors, those of us who never had many options to begin with." So I think it just really points out that it's affecting the most marginalized groups of the most marginalized groups. It really is like this compounding oppression and marginalization that is being forced on these group of workers. And something that's kind of coming out of this, out of these acts being passed, is the fact that sex workers are starting to collectivize and kind of start advocating for themselves more in the public sphere. I've noticed like there's SWAP, which is the sex workers outreach project, which is kind of forming like regional chapters. So there is a pretty in-depth Forbes article that highlights the work that's happening in the Bay Area with the SWAP Sacramento chapter. And they are starting to advocate reaching out to Congress people to kind of to express their concerns about these laws. And also trying to fight against bills that would attack the financial aspect of this industry. I've read on Twitter and Tumblr that a lot of sex workers, or even people that are just sex work adjacent, are getting their bank accounts frozen and other assets frozen. And there was
auditing scrutiny as well, I think, was a thing.
Right. Yeah. So I've noticed that a lot. And it something that the Forbes article kind of ties into is that these shadowy segments of the economy are getting oppressed equally. And they kind of tied in the sex workers and immigrants. Immigrant families are also getting their assets frozen. So it's just kind of highlighting how these marginalized communities are getting hit the hardest by these financial laws. So
because some of the people that had gray area banking going on were not anything to do with sex workers, but they were undocumented immigrants, right?
Right. Yes. So it's kind of these know your customer regulations that are kind of popping up, the interpretation of these financial rules varies, and a lot of judgment calls get made. So because there's so much.
It's weird how they're putting so much scrutiny and auditing focus on those people who don't make particularly very much money, but the people with millions and millions and millions of dollars and billions of dollars in assets and income every year just seem to dematerialize their money into various offshore accounts, and there's not a whole lot of scrutiny going on there.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's something that's been highlighted a lot with the IRS auditing like a higher proportion of people making less than $20,000. So it's kind of ridiculous that these law enforcement gets enacted in such really unequal weighted ways that really attacks these vulnerable communities the most.
Yeah, if you have a couple $1,000s in food stamp fraud by accident because someone didn't fall under the right means testing criteria, that's a bigger problem than if they make off with $1 billion to the Cayman Islands.
Right, exactly. So I would highly recommend reading the Forbes article. It really goes into the history of sex work activism going back to the 1900s. And how that is kind of tied into anti-immigrant sentiment as well, because a lot of the sex workers in like San Francisco were Chinese immigrants, and how the hate for that community kind of swept up white women as well working in the sex work industry. So I would highly recommend reading through that article.
Sarah, you had said before we started recording that were there any terms that we haven't covered so far that are important to know in this discussion?
I think it's important to realize that there's more than, if you're thinking that, oh, I don't engage in any of this, how can I get swept up in this? But a lot of websites changed their terms and conditions in reaction to this, most notably Facebook. And Sheryl Sandberg did speak in support of Sesta Fosta. And so in October 2018, Facebook added a sexual solicitation section to their terms of service, which a lot of it seems standard, banning nudity unless it's deemed art, medical, and or relates to breastfeeding. But then there's some things that get kind of broad. It all depends on interpretation. Using sexual hints is banned.
Yeah, so I think that was an Electronic Freedom Foundation article that was suggesting, like Netflix and chill, like if you mention that phrase or whatever, that probably falls under. Because they were actually quoting from the Facebook thing that had some specific thing that was like, you know, hoping to get lucky tonight, like that's now not okay to say, which is sort of just a weirdly intrusive policy. And I think part of their point was about that the potential for that is not even like, because you can be like, whatever, maybe people should just not be posting that. But even if they're not, like, if somebody who doesn't like them or somebody's stalker or a repressive government, because there's a lot of foreign countries that will be trying to monitor their citizens on Facebook, if they want to, like, get someone kicked off the site, they can just abusively report them, which we see that happen on Twitter all the time. Like, I got a 24-hour suspension from Twitter one time because someone who didn't like me just like searched my tweets to see if they could find anything that would potentially be a terms of service violation in the like automated reporting system. And I think I had, you know, said as a joking like anti-monarchist comment, death to all royals or something like that. And that was technically a threatening, or it was inciting violence. And I sincerely doubt that I was being reported by a passionate monarchist who was really out there defending the lives of royals worldwide. I think it was someone that didn't like me for some other reason, just like searched my tweets until they could find something that would get me suspended. And it could have probably gotten me a permanent suspension, except that I have a verified account. So I think that's probably why they just made me delete the thing. But I think, there's a potential for a lot of like abuse of that.
Exactly. And there's a Rolling Stone article headlined, "Queer Sex Educators Fear New Facebook Policy Could Get Them Banned." So a lot of things that LGBTQ activists say is that anything that is non-straight, non-cis, is automatically seen as sexual, even when it's just talking about the day-to-day lives and not anything sexual in nature or anything like that. It's just perfectly tame, but anything queer is sexualized and otherized and
trying to provide like sex education info that's maybe not being taught in somebody's public school. If they're,
exactly.
you know, gay or whatever, there's many parts of the country where they're not really getting any sex ed. And if an activist is trying to say, like, here's the information, you can make it as clinical as possible and it'll still get flagged.
Exactly, exactly. And one example shown was, this was Facebook in their enforcement of their rules. Earlier this year, Facebook blocked ad targeting based on sexual orientation, leaving many LGBTQ community organizations scrambling to figure out how to do outreach. And then at the same time, conversion therapy advertisements appeared to be not only allowed to target LGBTQ people, but specifically LGBTQ youth. So I think that this whole situation highlights something that users of these sites have complained of for ages, which is unclear enforcement of rules. Like, that seems to be biased against certain communities and in favor of others. Tumblr and Twitter have for a long time complained about neo-Nazis and white supremacists and pedophiles and stuff, you know, just these vile groups seemingly operating with impunity, with immunity. They're not banned. They're allowed to continue on the site. I mean, that's why it was such a big deal when InfoWars got taken off Twitter, because for so long they had been in violation of the stated TNCs, but any reporting done came back with, this is not in violation of our community standards, even when it seems like to the letter that it is in violation. So I think that's a lot. That's also feeling some of the outrage about this in particular. You're removing groups that aren't necessarily harming anyone. So LGBTQ outreach and education, not harmful. Neo-Nazis and anti-Semites and that are inherently harmful, but they're allowed to operate on these sites. So it's pointing out, it's highlighting the hypocrisy of social media sites and how they are administered. Makes people angry.
I also was thinking, you know, in a lot of this, like the sort of zooming out toward a bigger picture thing, it seems like a lot of this is maybe undercutting any actual efforts to deal with trafficking issues, because they keep selling all of this stuff as saying, oh, we're fighting trafficking, we're fighting trafficking. And that seems to be like the kind of hot new buzzword to talk about for a lot of different elected officials, you know, federal officials, state officials, municipal officials in big cities, you know, that there's this big issue with trafficking and they've got to stop it. And I honestly don't even know like what the data or statistics on that is. I don't know like how serious of a problem it is or not. But this sort of wildly misapplied response, I think is going to make it a lot harder to do anything about the actual problem or even make clear whether or not there is a problem and what the scale and scope of it is. I think in the offline sphere, we've also seen stuff along similar lines, which again, to demonstrate how people get kind of swept up in the net. There was a whole bunch of posts one day on Twitter about like where this airline and then like the unions representing the flight attendants were like proudly talking about how their flight attendants had stopped a human trafficking case because, you know, the flight attendants had gone to all these trainings about how to recognize potential signs of human trafficking. And, you know, that got a bunch of headlines. And then it turned out like the next day with, of course, much less media attention and like definitely not a lot of social media mea culpas happening there, that they had basically just gotten some white dad arrested because his daughters were, you know, mixed race or like maybe transracial adoptees or something like that. But it was completely legitimate. They were his actual daughters. That, you know, there was no reason to arrest them. It caused a huge problem. And they were just like, well, he was acting weird and or something, you know, and that this fit our description or our profile of what a human trafficker is. And it turned out it was just completely made up. And like, so that's the thing is, I don't know. I have no way of gauging what the scale of the actual problem is, because we're getting all this like sort of false positives or blurrier, saying like, well, this could be construed as human trafficking, and really it's just voluntary, you know, voluntary sex workers that don't have anything to do with trafficking or anything like that. Like, it's hard, like, they're just kind of throwing them all in the same categories, and of course inflates their law enforcement numbers, etc. So yeah, that's kind of something that I've been thinking about in the context of a lot of this sort of bigger picture issue.
I think it it takes away the agency that a lot of sex workers have. Like, a lot of the sex activists that are active on the internet are doing it voluntarily, and while they say that obviously they're against sex trafficking, they are also against having their agency removed, being criminalized in such a way that it acts like they didn't have any choice in the work that they voluntarily choose to do. So yeah, I think that's something that definitely needs to be discussed, like what the percentages are and how many people are doing it voluntarily versus involuntarily. And I think that is getting really ignored in these blanket applications of laws and rules and terms and conditions.
Now, in December, the reason we started talking about behind the scenes about doing an episode on this was because of the development with Tumblr. Sarah, could you talk a little bit about what happened and also the fact that Tumblr basically built itself on adult content and then suddenly sort of turned on its user base?
Sure. So December 4th, I believe it was, Tumblr made an announcement that starting December 17th, all adult content would be banned on Tumblr. And they used the time between the 4th and the 17th to roll out little warnings to users. So they flagged posts as explicit, saying, hey, starting December 17th, this would be a post that would be not allowed on Tumblr. They used a really cheap algorithm for that. So in the early days, a lot of people were mocking that it flagged photos of red as explicit, sand dunes, pictures of shirtless male models and they got a lot of flack for their updated rules because they
shirtless
used the phrase
dudes on like network TV, like
exactly
from
yeah
primetime completely television dramas, like
yeah stuff
even
that
drawings
is on TV. Exactly. And the problem was that they used the phrase in their terms and conditions, female presenting nipples, which was offensive on many levels. First, because, you know, women's nipples probably shouldn't be inherently sexualized, even though they are in this society, but, you know, they're breastfeeding photos and stuff. And they did say that they would do a pass for breastfeeding photos, breastfeeding advocacy, that sort of thing. But the phrase female presenting nipples seems like this straddling this weird line between being okay with non-cis gender people, but also saying if you are a trans woman, we can't see your nipples. So it was kind of, it's just this weird, almost arbitrary set of rules about who can show their bodies and who can't. But going back to the beginning days of Tumblr, it was actually pretty open to adult content. David Karp, the founder of Tumblr, was, I think in the, there was a screenshot from the old terms and conditions, which I totally can't recall at this time, but it was a catchy rhyme about it's everything's okay. You can pretty much show whatever you want, go for it. But with a catchy rhyme. So a lot of people took that seriously. You know, you'd have models showing off their nude photos and saying, if you want to see the whole set, you can subscribe here, that sort of thing. So people were using it as a platform to advertise their own businesses. They were using it just to show off their art. If they were photographers, you know, it's a portfolio site for people to gain freelance clients and things like that. So people were using it for all these purposes, and it was attractive because it was a site that was free to use that did allow, because I don't think Flickr allows that sort of thing. So even if you are a photographer showing off a portfolio on a free site like Flickr, you wouldn't be able to show all your work there, but you could on Tumblr. And so it drew in a whole bunch of users who were eager for that openness and that acceptance. And there was a stat that I read somewhere that 12% of the top 200,000 Tumblrs by popularity were adult-oriented blogs, whether that was modeling or video or that sort of thing. So it was a huge part of the user base. And so a lot of people feel personally betrayed that a community that was so welcoming to them have now shut them out. And so a lot of people said, with Backpage getting shut down, I moved to Tumblr because I thought I could. I was concerned about my website being shut down, because with that Section 230 that I mentioned earlier, I believe it applies to web hosting services as well. So if you have your own personal website, but it's hosted through a company that is afraid of liability, they will shut down your hosting. So they just wanted to be able to make a living based on what they did. And I think one thing that also gets swept up in this is things that are legal forms of, and I won't say sex work, but sex adjacent work. So you have models that I mentioned, nude models. You'd have some actors, cam girls, that sort of thing, that is in a kind of legal gray area, I suppose, maybe under, they would be shut out. So it's cutting off more than just face-to-face sex workers and all under the guise of making a more welcoming community. A lot of people pointed out that Tumblr in November had been taken off Apple's App Store, and this pushed them to ban all adult content. The problem with that was that was for child porn, which of course is illegal and should have already not been allowed on the site. But they had but Tumblr has a real problem with enforcing the rules, just like Twitter I mentioned before. So you'd have child porn on this site, and you know, I guess they couldn't keep up with administering it, moderating it, even though their user base was crying out for it just as well. I mean, no one wants to be on a site where that is occurring or getting posted. So this is punishing the entire user base for the actions of some people acting in bad faith and breaking the law, clearly breaking federal laws and state laws. And so it's really unfortunate that it's knocking everyone down for this, and in total reversal of the old websites, welcoming their words of welcome for everyone acting legally.
Rachel, do you want to say any closing thoughts on any of this?
Yeah, I just I wanted to point out that in spring 2013, Tumblr was acquired by Yahoo, I think for $1 billion, right? Yeah. Right. So it because of the popularity of the site, and because of the popularity of their not safe for work adult oriented content, so they really just like cashed out at the expense of selling out their user base. So I just wanted to point out how awful that is.
All right. Well, we're going to have a bunch of links to news articles up at arsenalfordemocracy.com when we post this episode. So if you wanted to learn more about some of these issues, you can look up stuff there. Rachel, thank you for being on the show as always.
Thank you. Good to be here in the new year.
And happy new year, Sarah. Thank you for being on the show.
Happy new year to you and to all the listeners.
That's all the time we have this week. Tweet us your comments at AFDRadio or email AFDRadio@gmail.com. The show is available for download from arsenalfordemocracy.com on Tuesdays. You can hear it on the air in Delaware from 91.3 FM WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark every Tuesday at noon Eastern. Our theme music was composed for us by Stuntbird. If there are articles or papers discussed in an episode, we usually post links to them on arsenalfordemocracy.com along with each episode. From my studio in Newton, Massachusetts, I'm Bill Humphrey, and I approve this message.